Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark LeBounier. Coming up in this hour, we begin the first of two three-part stories. Later on, it's Adventures by Morse, but first, an adaptation of Mark Twain's great work, A Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court, from the World's Greatest Novels series. This heard on NBC on June 4th, 1948.
The World's Great Novels. Since the times of the bards and the troubadours, many a story has been told of King Arthur and his round table, those days of old when knighthood was in flower. One of the finest stories is not a legend from the dim past, but a tale first told little more than half a century ago by the most typical of American writers, Samuel Clemens. We present the first of a three-part adaptation of A Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court, another in our series of books that live the world's great novel.
As Samuel Clemens tells the story, he himself met the Connecticut Yankee in an ordinary way. But before long, an extraordinary thing happened. One summer in the 1880s, Samuel Clemens was traveling in England.
During that summer in England, I spent most of my time visiting places of historical interest. And I became somewhat familiar with England's past. One day, I took a guided tour of ancient Warwick Castle. As we made our way along those centuries-old corridors, I fell into conversation with an old gentleman who seemed as ancient as the castle itself. It was pleasant meeting him, for he was a countryman of mine. And yet, he seemed to know more about the armor on display and more about the history of the days of King Arthur and his round table than anyone I'd ever met. Then our group paused at the end of a dimly lit hallway, and the old gentleman and I listened to the voice of our guide.
This is an ancient hauberk or coat of mail, date of the 6th century, time of King Arthur and the round table. The hauberk is said to have belonged to the knight Sir Sagramore le Desirous. Observe the round hole through the chainmail in the left breast. Can't be accounted for. Supposed to have been done with a bullet since the invention of firearms, perhaps maliciously, by Cromwell's soldiers.
Now, if you say, that's a strange one, all right. A bullet hole in a suit of armor.
Yes, it's strange, all right. Even stranger than you think. It had nothing to do with Cromwell's men, either.
What? I mean, how can you be so sure?
Which you will, I saw it done.
What?
In sooth, I did it myself.
I was so startled by the stranger's remark that I must have stood staring at the bullet hole. When I pulled myself together, the others had gone. I hurried after them in the dusky gloom, but my friends seemed to have disappeared. That evening, I sat alone in my rooms at the Warwick Arms. The wind roared in the dark night outside, and the rain beat against the windows. The room itself was full of moving shadows as I stared into the fire, lost in a dream of the past. Who's there? I mean, come in.
Ah, good evening, sir. I hope I didn't startle you.
Perhaps you did a bit. But sit down, won't you?
No, it's late for a man my age, but I thought I might owe you an explanation about this afternoon.
Well, I'd certainly like to have one.
Here's a book I've written which will explain everything. I've never shown it to anyone before, but I'm getting old, so perhaps I should share my story.
I'm much obliged to you.
My room's just down the hall. You may return the book when you've finished. Now, good night.
You must leave so soon?
Yes. Good night. I give you good den, fair sir. I'm an American. I was born and reared in Hartford, in the state of Connecticut anyway, and just over the river in the country. So I'm a Yankee of the Yankees, you can lay to that, and practical as the day is long. My father was a blacksmith, so I got to be handy with tools, even at inventing things. I went to work at the arms factory in Hartford, and in time I was head superintendent, but I wasn't one to take advantage of my position when a dispute came up, so that's how I happened to get in a fight with a husky mill hand. And it happened that he found a crowbar handy, and everything suddenly went dark.
When I came to, I was sitting on a grassy meadow under a big tree. Standing over me was a big galoot right out of a picture book. He was on horseback and had a big spear sticking right at me.
Ho, fair sir! Will ye joust?
Will I, which?
Will ye try a passage of arms for land or for lady?
What are you giving me, Junior? Get along back to your circus or I'll report you.
Hold now. If he will not joust, I claim ye captive of my spear.
Well, whether you're crazy or not, you got a mighty good argument in that spear. What's your proposition?
Proposition? I wit not what you speak it.
I wit not much myself, but which way is it to Hartford?
Sooth to say, I understand ye not. But come, let us wither away.
All right, neighbor, but where shall we wither to?
Even to yon castlements. Can ye not the turrets even now?
By George, there is a village over there. What is it, Bridgeport?
Nay, Camelot.
Well, sir, I never saw such a place as that town we came to. There was a big castle on a hill, and there were fellows on horseback parading around the streets, all togged out in gleaming armor, plumed helmets, and gilded spears. And my man kept pushing me along while everybody gaped at me till we got near the castle. Then a drawbridge came down. We passed over, and my man turned me and his horse over to some men who were standing around wearing out the cobblestones. You know, they didn't look any too friendly, but I finally got one off a bit to the side. Pardon me, brother. I take it this must be some kind of a lunatic asylum. I wonder if you'd tell me where I can find the head keeper of the place.
Prithee, fair sir, do not let me.
Let you? Let you what?
Oh, do not hinder me, then, if that word please thee better. In sooth, I must be gone to my tasks.
Oh, so you work here?
Verily, I trow, if what question be asked. Prithee, tell whence camest thy strange and wondrous garb.
Oh, these clothes? Why, I got them at the Hartford Men's Shop. Pretty snappy, aren't they?
Snappy?
I'd like to know what's going on here.
Truly, even now cometh the servant of thy captor, mayhap with news.
Oh, you mean this funny-looking kid in the shrimp-colored tights?
Aye. He cometh from Sir Kay to take you in his charge, I vow.
Hey there, bud, are you looking for me?
An ye be Sir Kay's captive, I claim ye my prisoner.
All right, and who are you?
I am a page, and I'm sent to have you in my charge. And it please ye, fair sir?
Look, boy, I'm a stranger here, and friendless. Now, just tell me straight, are you in your right mind?
Forsooth, I am indeed, fair sir.
And these other people, are they in their right minds?
To be sure. I wit not why ye ask.
Oh, then this place isn't a lunatic asylum?
Nay.
Oh, now, look, either I've gone crazy or something just as awful has happened. Tell me, honest and true, where am I?
Why, in King Arthur's court.
In King Arthur's... Now, just give me a little time. Oh, by the way, what time is it? No, never mind the time. Tell me the day, the year.
Ye wit not that? 'Tis the 19th of June in the year 528.
528. Look, boy, is there someplace I could rest a few minutes?
Ah, forsooth, that's why I have come, to conduct ye to yon dungeon.
A dungeon?
There ye shall stay, until King Arthur's court doth decide thy fate.
Well, I haven't done anything wrong, but if they want to put me in the hoosegow overnight, I guess there's nothing I can do about it. I slept that night, for I was even more tired than worried. When I woke up in the morning, my first thought was that I'd had a very curious dream. But then there was a rattling as the door of the dungeon opened. I blinked in the sudden light and then saw my young friend, the page, standing there.
It is morning, fair sir, and I have come as early as I might.
Gosh, I thought for a minute I was waking up, but this dream seems to go on and on.
A dream? Prithee, what dream?
What dream? Oh, why, the dream that I'm in King Arthur's court, that I'm talking to a page dressed like you, and that it's the year 528.
Hold now with your talk of dreams. Is it a dream, too, that you're to be burned at the stake tomorrow?
Burned? Tomorrow? Oh, now look, they can't do that. I haven't even had a trial.
Oh, yes, you were tried last night by King Arthur's court and condemned to death.
Now, just a second, Clarence, my boy, if that happens to be your name. I'm not used to having things done that way. I'm a Yankee from Connecticut, and I've got certain rights.
Rights? Are ye not a captive and a slave?
Maybe I can't explain it to you right now, Clarence, but I've got rights all the same, no matter who or what I am. Now, you're the only friend I've got, but there must be some way you can help me escape from here.
Escape? Ah, there is no hope of escape. Not only are many guards at hand, but there are other reasons.
Other reasons? What reasons? Tell me, boy.
I should not. But Merlin the magician has woven a spell about this dungeon, an enchantment no mortal would dare defy.
Merlin has whipped up a spell?
Yes. I prithee never tell I spoke of it, or I shall die.
Old Merlin, is it? Why, I'd forgotten all about that old faker. Of course, he would be around to see how much trouble he can cause. Why, buck up, Clarence. I'll show that fraud a trick or two that'll curl his hair.
Oh, please, sir, don't speak so. 'Tis death to question Merlin's magic.
That's what he'd like to have you think. But it just so happens that where I come from, every man is more of a magician than Merlin ever was, and without any mysterious hocus-pocus either.
You, sir? You are a magician?
Yes, sirree, Bob. Now, I've got a little figuring to do. You said that yesterday was the 19th of June, 528, right?
Yes, sir.
Today, then, is the 20th, and when am I to be burned alive?
On the morrow at high noon.
Well, I guess every magician needs a little luck, and that's mine. I'll teach that Merlin not to fool around with a Hartford man. Can you get a message from me to the king?
Oh, yes. When I tell him you are a magician, he will hear me.
All right, Clarence. You go and tell the king that at that hour, at high noon tomorrow, I will smother the world in the darkness of midnight. I will blot out the sun, and he will never shine again. Can you remember to tell him that?
Yes. Yes, I'll tell
him. Now, buck up, Clarence. Why, you're about to faint.
But it's so terrible, so dreadful. Knowledge of such things must be learned from the devil.
Not necessarily, Clarence. In this case, it was learned from the old farmer's almanac. For some reason, Yankees have a way of storing bits of useless knowledge in their heads. Only this time, it wasn't going to be useless. I recalled that there had been a total eclipse of the sun on the 21st of June in the year 528, the very day I was to die. An eclipse that began a few minutes after noon. And still, I could be wrong, so I hoped the king wouldn't call my bluff. The next day dawned, and a tiny ray of light crept into my cell and moved slowly along the floor, signaling the approach of noon. And then I heard the guards marching towards my dungeon. The door was opened, and I was surrounded and seized.
The stake is ready. Come.
We walked along the dark underground corridors, then out into the blinding sunlight. We made our way across the enclosed courtyard, and I skipped a step as I saw the stake and the pile of faggots heaped about it. The courtyard was filled with a multitude of staring faces, but there wasn't a sound as I was led and fastened to the stake. It was then I turned and saw King Arthur and Master Merlin seated on a platform near. As the sticks were piled high about me, the king finally spoke.
Hast thou now aught to say, O stranger? Ere thy execution be performed?
What if I had miscalculated? What if there was to be no eclipse? What if it came a few minutes too late? I glanced at the torchbearer standing by and decided to stall for time. I swallowed and then raised my voice. Mr. Master of Ceremonies, members of the Round Table Association, and ladies and gentlemen, unaccustomed as I am to public speaking, on this occasion I would like to say a few words. I am reminded of the story about the two Hibernians, Sir Patrick and Sir Michael. It seems that once there was these two ancient Irishmen, and they were just walking down the high road, when forsooth be jabers, they peradventure to encounter a strange village. Sweat broke out all over me as I spoke, for I could see I wasn't holding their attention. I saw them twist and squirm and begin to gaze upwards. Then my eyes followed theirs, and I saw at last a rim of black begin to spread slowly across the sun's disk.
The sun!
It's turning black!
I knew that in another moment they'd turn back to me. So I struck a pose I'd learned in elocution class. My arm raised majestically toward the sun. Just then, there came two shouts.
Apply the torch at once, I say!
Cease, Merlin! I, King Arthur, to forbid it.
Stay where you are. If any man moves, even the king, before I give him leave, I will blast him with thunder. I will consume him with lightning.
Heed him not.
'Tis but a strange chance and not his magic.
Hold, Merlin. Even now it groweth darker moment by moment. I pray ye be merciful, fair sir. I, King Arthur, on behalf of my people, pray ye to spare us. Name any terms you choose, even to half my kingdom, but banish this calamity from us. Spare, I pray ye, the sun.
I have reflected, Sir King. For a lesson, I will let this darkness spread night in the world. But whether I blot out the sun for good or restore it rests with you. These are my terms. You shall remain king over all your dominions, but you shall appoint me your perpetual minister and executive. Do you agree?
Away with his bonds. Set him free. He has become the king's right hand and is clothed with power and authority, and his seat is upon the highest step of the throne.
Well, sir, by the time I waved my hand to banish the enchantment, I'd become the most powerful and popular man in that kingdom. They gave me the best silks and velvets they had and set me up in the best guest room. Soon as I got settled down, I made Clarence my general handyman and set about trying to bring the country up to date. Or you might say, ahead of date. Oh, I had the world in a jug. But I'll tell you that anyone who gets to be a leader on the basis of being a miracle worker is in for trouble. Naturally, before very long, the people started to want more magic.
Even now, fair sir, there is great restlessness among the people for another miracle.
Oh, doggone it, Clarence. I don't have time to knock off from work and make miracles all the time. I've got important things to do. I've got to get an iron foundry going and get some newspapers started and get some good, comfortable furniture made that'll sell at low prices. Things like that are more important than magic.
Wit ye that Merlin is spreading rumors amongst the people that ye cannot perform another miracle?
Huh?
That ye have no more magic?
Merlin, is it? Good old Merlin. Well, I'll just fix his wagon once and for all, and this will take your help, Clarence.
Prithee, only tell me what to do, fair sir.
Well, sir, first thing, I'm going to use my authority to put Merlin in the dungeon, the same one I was in.
Oh.
Then I want you to get notice around by herald and trumpet that in about 2 weeks I'll blow up old Merlin's stone tower with fire from heaven.
Merlin's tower? Odds bodikins. It is verily a fortress.
Yep, ought to be quite a sight blowing that piece of masonry all over the landscape. Now look, Clarence, can you get hold of a few strong arm boys we can trust?
I wit ye mean those brave of heart but silent of mouth.
Ye wit well. You see, this magic will take a bit of preparation. First of all, we've got to make a few bushels of blasting powder. I know how, but I'll need some help.
Ye need only name the time and place to meet.
Now, my idea is to pack those tower walls with blasting powder. We'll have to put it in at night. Then we'll rig up a lightning rod and wire up all the different batches of powder. Along about this time of year, we're bound to get a good thunderstorm, and that rod will load up with electricity till all of a sudden, boom, no more Merlin's tower.
Oh, truly it soundeth like the most remarkable of all magic.
Well, now, it ain't just the size of a piece of magic that counts, Clarence. It's the showmanship. Then, too, we've got to get a little curiosity worked up here. So you warn everybody to stay away from that locality till the big event comes off. Well, sir, we packed that old stone tower with enough powder to blow up the Tower of London. We got our lightning rod all set, and I started to keep an eye on the weather. I sent out word that I'd give notice of the magic moment in advance by flags if it was daytime, or by torch baskets on the castle towers if it was to be at night. We had a lot of sunny days, but then the wind changed, and I saw a storm was blowing up. It was one of those real dark, scary nights when we lit the torch baskets, and that whole countryside began filling up with people huddling together in the darkness. We climbed to the topmost battlements of the castle, and I sent for Merlin. Mr. Merlin, you wanted to burn me alive when I hadn't done you any harm, and since then you've been trying to ruin my professional reputation. Therefore, I'm going to call down fire and blow up your tower. But if you think you can break my enchantments, just go ahead and try. Step up to bat now. This is your inning.
Verily, I can break your enchantments, fair sir. And I will, doubt it not.
All right, but you better get a move on. That lightning's getting close.
Look at him making an invisible circle, sir. What's the meaning of his strange motion?
Well, Clarence, he's got a little pinch of some kind of powder there. Oh, now he's striking a light to it.
Oh, it maketh a wondrous strange flame, sir.
Don't worry about it, Clarence. Uh-oh. I'm afraid we can't hold things. things off much longer. You've had time enough, Merlin. Now let me step in here and see what I can do. One for the money, two for the show, three to make ready, and four to go. Oh, taking a little longer than I figured. Hickory, dickory, dock, the mouse ran up the clock. There you are, folks. And when it comes to first-class magic, John W. Merlin, you just don't have it. But I'm going to let you stick around and prophesy the weather and do odds and ends like that. That's the kind of a fellow I am.
Of course, turning the weather predicting over to Merlin was a sure way to undermine public confidence in him. There's no magician can stand up to that. And I didn't have any trouble with him for quite a spell. There wasn't any question who was head man in the realm, but I didn't try to horn in on the nobility. Didn't even take a title. All the same, I'll admit I was pleased when a title was finally given to me. The people just naturally started to call me the boss. The boss. Ah, that's the kind of title I liked. It stood for something. Not like a baron or a duke or an earl, and it was given to me by the people themselves. Well, during the next few years, with Clarence working as my right-hand man, I made a heap of progress. We strung secret telephone and telegraph lines about, started up a few factories, and got a school system going. And it was all undercover because I learned soon enough that you can't move too fast. But then, by golly, came the darndest interruption. It was Clarence who came running into my office one day to tell me about it.
'Tis wondrous good fortune, sir boss. There cameth to the king's court a fair damsel from a far country. She bringeth a strange tale of a distant castle where her mistress and other maidens are held captive by three cruel and monstrous brothers.
Oh, come now, Clarence. That's an old story in these parts.
But, boss, these brothers are verily giants, each with four arms and with one great eye in the middle of the forehead. Whoe'er shall go to the rescue shall be the hero of the realm.
Well, there are plenty of knights hanging about the Table Round, Arthur. As I understand it, the crusading season doesn't open till later.
Ah, but, Sir Boss, that is my news. Though any knight would die for this adventure, our liege lord the king hath appointed thee this damsel's protector, and yours is the honor of the rescue.
Well, now, just a minute, doggone it. Supposing I don't feel like gallivanting around on a wild goose chase.
Oh, 'tis not a favor one canst refuse, fair sir. Would be a sign of cowardice and an insult to the king.
Well, I guess he means it as a favor, all right, and I suppose I'll have to take it on. Where is this damsel who started all this hullabaloo?
She awaits in now, Sir Boss. I shall summon her.
Pray do. And now, young lady, may I ask your name?
I hide the Demoiselle Elisande la Cattle-Reese. And it please you.
Oh, the Demoiselle Alessandi. Do you mind if I just call you Miss Sandy? And it please you.
Yes.
Now, where are you from?
From the land of Motor, sir.
Oh, the land of Motor. Yes. If you'll excuse my ignorance, where is that?
Oh, it lies in a far country, in beyond many leagues.
Well, in what direction?
Direction? Oh, please thee, sir, it hath no direction, for the road turneth evermore. Not one way only, but many.
Oh, I see. Well, just where is this castle you speak about?
It lieth fair in the land of Motor.
But where in the world is... Oh, never mind. Clarence, maybe you can help me. Do we have a map?
A map? I wit not what you speak.
Oh, I forgot. I haven't invented them yet. But how am I going to get to this place?
La, your worship, that is lightly answered. She will go with thee.
Go with me?
In sooth, she shall. 'Tis the way 'tis always done.
All right. But how big are these four giants? What do they look like? Say, have you ever seen them?
Seen them? Oh, indeed that I never have, my lord. But I have heard...
Oh, you've heard. Everybody's heard about them, but you never find anyone who's seen them with his own eyes. I guess there's nothing to do now but go and have a look for myself. On the morning we were to leave, Clarence and the other boys rallied around to help me put on my armor. Yes, I had to put on armor. Me, a man who hated even to doll himself up in a stiff collar.
Here is your chainmail, Sir Boss.
Chainmail. Now my greaves.
Greaves.
Backplate.
Backplate.
Breastplate.
Breastplate.
Screwdriver.
Screwdriver. Nay, I wit not what ye mean.
Never mind. But I do wish I had a can opener. What else is there?
Sword, gauntlets, helmet, spear, shield.
Oh, there's enough stovepipe for a 10-room house. Say, maybe I could check this baggage on through and pick it up at the station. Oh, I guess not. Even if we had a train, you can't buy a ticket to the land of motor when you don't know where it is.
Haste thee, Sir Boss. The groom is bringing thy horse.
I don't blame it for laughing. Whoa, boy. Steady, boy. Well, anyway, I have a way of getting up on this nag. Hoist me up with that pulley, man, then back the horse under me.
Oh.
At last, they got me on the horse. The king made a little speech. The knights cheered, and Miss Sandy climbed up behind me on a pillion, and we were ready to move off. As we moved through Camelot, the trumpets sounded, flags were unfurled, the sun gleamed on my armor, and the plume of my helmet danced in the breeze. Why, I even began to feel like a conquering hero. Until we came to the outskirts of town, where a ragged little hoodlum made a bullseye out of my helmet with a rock. No, sir. No matter what age you live in, boys just don't have respect for anything or anybody.
And so the Connecticut Yankees set off from Camelot in search of adventure in the land of motor. Next week, we find him justing with challenging knights, vanquishing ogres, and learning that the greatest terror of all is not an enemy in armor, but tyranny itself.
The World's Greatest Novel, Suntuned to Yesterday, an NBC episode from June 4th, 1948, taking on Mark Twain or Samuel Clemens's work, A Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court, first published in 1889. We'll hear part two of three next week at the same time. You're listening to an hour of series on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Livonier. Now time for Adventures by Morse with part one of three of the story A Coffin for the Lady. Elliot Lewis stars from March 18th, 1944.
Adventures by Morse. Carlton E. Morse presents A Coffin for the Lady, featuring Captain Friday.
If you like high adventure, come with me. If you like the stealth of intrigue, come with me. If you like blood and thunder, come with me.
Four o'clock, dusk of a late winter afternoon on Marmaduke Island. Uninhabited and somewhere off the Pacific coast of Canada. Meet Captain Bart Friday and Skip Turner, soaked to the skin, lying in the dank leaf mold screened by a bank of fern. Watching, listening, waiting. No sound in all the empty forest, except the dripping of rain-soaked trees and the lapping of water on the bank of the inland bay a score of yards away. Skip stirred.
Honest to my grandma, Captain.
Keep your voice down.
Why? I bet there ain't even a Pacific cat within 20 miles of where we're laying.
As the crow flies?
Yeah, as the crow flies. Here we've been laying for 3 full hours. Ain't that I mind playing Indian if the United States of America wants us to play Indian. Ain't that. It's just that if we gotta do it, why'd we have to pick a middle of winter? And I mean a rainy winter.
Take it easy, old boy.
Suckers, that's what we are. We don't know when we're well off. That's the matter with us. We're sitting pretty in our office back in San Francisco. Friday making money for us. We got the cutest secretary in captivity. We got everything. And what do? We come up here on a 2x4 uninhabited island and lay on our stomachs in wet leaf mold. Suckers.
Not so loud, sucker.
And what for, I asked you.
Little job for military intelligence.
Do we know what kind of a job?
No.
Doggone right we don't. We don't even know who we're working for.
Yes, we do. Military intelligence.
And that's what this guy brought us up here says.
Major James Lawrence is everything he says he is.
Maybe.
Now you're just talking through your hat because you're cold and hungry.
You're dadgum right I'm cold and hungry. And wet and cramped. And I got a cold coming on in my head. And that ain't all either.
No?
No. Do you realize we ain't so much as even set eyes on an honest-to-goodness pretty female woman for more than a week now?
Mm-hmm.
What do you mean, uh-huh? You act like women didn't amount to no more than a hill of beans.
I was just thinking.
Thinking what?
This job must be pretty hot stuff.
How you figure?
We've been brought up here without a word of information. Major Lawrence hasn't said a word to us about the mission, except that our work should be cut out for us on the return trip. And for us to keep our eyes cocked and our ammunition dry.
He said that?
Yeah. Now he's spotted us here while he's gone back into the woods to keep some kind of a rendezvous.
Yeah, 3 hours. When he rendezvous, he rendezvous. You suppose we're ever gonna know what this is all about?
I don't know. Military intelligence. Listen.
I don't hear nothing.
Somebody's coming through the brush.
Yeah. Yeah, I get it.
Keep down, you crazy idiot.
What if it's Major Lawrence?
Let him come to us.
Hey, it's not the Major. Somebody in army uniform, though. What's that he's toting in his arms?
He's carrying some... Skip, he's hurt.
Yeah. Guy's stumbling around like a... Hey, he's down.
Come on, quick.
Yeah. Paul down in a heap. Hey, Captain, there's a knife in his back.
So I see. Hasn't corked out yet, but he's unconscious.
No, not unconscious.
Hey.
Who are you? What happened to Major Lawrence? Where'd you get this?
Can't talk much. Get the girl to Port Lancer.
Girl?
Girl to Port Lancer. They want her dead.
Hey, Captain Friday, this is a girl he was carrying. She's gagged and bound hand and foot.
Hurry. Hurry. Get back to the boat. Get to the mainland. Get her off this island. Major Lawrence is dead.
He's gone, Captain?
Yeah, did you get that? Major Lawrence is dead.
Yeah, you think we ought to go look for him?
No, we got to get this girl out of here.
You think we can get him and this little hunk of female?
Never mind this man.
Hey, Cap.
Didn't you hear him say to hurry? They must be hot on his trail. Pick up the girl.
Seems a shame.
Take his papers along. Come on, can you run with her?
Yeah, she don't weigh no more than a minute. I sure hate to desert the Major and that soldier, though.
We'll notify the authorities first chance we get. What's the girl look like?
Can't tell much. She's gagged and blindfolded. Spring chicken, though, I can tell that.
Yeah.
Hey!
Quick! Around the bend in the path, they're shooting at us.
You're doggone right there shooting at us. I felt that hunk of lead go by just as plain.
We're coming to the boat. Want a hand with the girl?
No. Only you shut the launch off while I'm getting in with her.
Okay. You're gonna have to wade out with her.
Yeah, up to our hips. Woo-wee!
Dump her in. Jump in, quick.
Yeah, man. Push off. She's free. Climb in, Captain.
You all set?
Yeah, let her go. Gone, will you listen to that? Sounds like a little private war going on back there.
We're getting out far enough now so they can't do us much damage.
Yeah. It's funny they don't come out in the open. We've heard all them shots, but ain't seen hiding the hair nobody.
Shooting stopped, too. Notice that?
Yeah. Saw it was no use and gave up the chase, looks like. Hey, how about me opening this little package and see what we got?
Package?
Yeah, the babe, the doll. She's tied up like a Christmas candy bar.
Okay, untie her. But first get that gag out of her mouth.
Yeah. Oh, lady, they got enough dried good stuff in your pretty face to dress a bride. There we are.
Oh, thank you.
Hey, Captain, look at what we got. Hey, she's pretty. Even in men's clothes, she's pretty.
Hello there.
I don't know who you two men are, but I want to thank you for saving my life. I think you're wonderful. I love both of you.
Well, now, that's just about the nicest speech I ever heard.
Well, don't stand there like an idiot, Skip. Cut the ropes on her hands and feet.
Oh, sure. What am I thinking about? Shut up, honey, so I can get at those wrists.
They tied my hands behind me.
Oh, say they did. There, that cut them loose.
Oh, all the circulation's gone.
Yeah, well, rub them together hard. That'll bring the blood back.
But they feel like they were dead. Where are we going?
I don't know. Oh, Captain.
What's the matter?
Little lady wants to know where we're taking her.
We'll be arriving on the mainland in another 5 or 10 minutes. Here we are.
But there's nothing here at all. Just forest.
That's all. Run the boat up alongside that old piling and tie her up, Skip.
Aye, aye, Captain Friday.
But I don't understand. I thought you were taking me to some town or at least a village.
Boat's all secure.
Good. We have to wade ashore from here. I'll get over the side and carry you.
Hey, how about me carrying her? I saw her first.
You'll bring the rifles and bedding.
Oh, that's great. I get to bring the rifles and bedding.
And don't get them wet. Come on over the side, lady.
I suppose there's nothing else to do.
Nothing. Give me a hand.
Here.
Now, over with you.
You must be freezing in that water.
You just lie quietly and you won't get a drop on you. By the way, what's your name?
Judith.
That all?
Judith Wright. Now you know more about me than I know about you.
Here we go up the bank. There. Well, there you are. Back on dry land, safe and sound.
Oh, you don't know what a good feeling it is. Oh, horses. You got horses hidden back in the woods.
That's right.
Ooh-wee. Honest to Christmas, every time I wade in the Pacific Ocean, it seems to get colder.
Want to build a fire, Skip?
Fire?
We got to dry out. Besides that, I want a little conversation with Miss Wright here.
Oh, is that her name?
Judith Wright. Miss Wright, this is one of my sidekicks, Skip Turner.
Hello, Skip.
Same to you, Miss Wright.
Oh, Skip to Miss Wright. Anybody who saved a girl's life ought to be allowed to use her first name.
Well, that suits me right down to the skin.
And who are you, Captain?
I'm Captain Bart Friday.
Captain of what?
No, it's just a title.
Don't let him kid you, sis.
Skip?
Yeah?
I thought you were going to build a fire.
Oh, but look, you Cap, I thought we was running away from a bunch of bad boys. Now, them babies who were shooting at us must have a boat same as we got. And if they're so anxious to get Judith back...
They got the whole Canadian coastline to look for us. It'll take them a month to find this hiding place.
Yeah, but fire makes smoke, and smoke
make
can be...
Make a fire without smoke.
Now, whoever heard
Indians
of a...
Indians do.
Huh? Make a fire without smoke?
Sure. Get me some dry twigs and leaves. I'll show you.
Well, what do you know? The good-looking redhead's a Girl Scout.
You seem awfully cheerful, Miss Wright.
Why shouldn't I be? I've just been rescued. Oh. You're thinking of Major Lawrence and that poor soldier.
Yeah. They both died getting you out of whatever mess you're in. You could be a little more concerned.
I'm sorry. They were friends of yours?
I've done a little work with the Major. I never saw a soldier in my life.
Well, at least it isn't a personal loss.
That was a very dramatic thing. Army GI running down a rough forest trail with a girl in his arms and a 10-inch dagger blade between his shoulders.
Yes.
The girl gagged and bound.
I know.
How'd you get into a mess like that?
It's something that just happens to people in this crazy world.
How old are you?
20.
You working for military intelligence?
I don't think that's a question you have any right to ask, Captain Friday.
What do you know about Port Lancer?
Nothing. Should I?
I don't know.
The soldier gasped out Port Lancer before he died.
Yes, I heard him. You're supposed to take me there.
Why?
I don't know. I just heard him tell you so.
Yeah. Okay, Judith, here's some dry leaves and twigs like you asked for.
Forget them. We're going to Port Lancer.
But, Cap, the fire...
Blast the fire. Get the horses.
Sure.
Well, why the sudden urge to rush to Port Lancer, Captain Friday?
I'm being double-crossed somewhere along the line, and I can't hold still till I find out who's doing it and why.
We gotta wade this creek.
I don't hear no creek.
You will as soon as we turn the corner. It's just up ahead.
How much further, Captain Friday?
We'll be at Port Lancer in another 5 minutes.
I'm not used to riding.
Neither am I, and that's a fact. I bet they'll have to peel to see to my pants off. I've ground it between me and the saddle so hard.
I hear the running water up ahead.
Yeah, here's where we cross. Now keep a tight rein. The creek bed has a rocky bottom, and your horse is liable to stumble unless you keep his head up. Here we go now. Come on, boy. Bank with you. Good boy. Come on, Miss Wright. Just hang on. Keep right behind us, Skip.
Okay, here we come. Come on, boy. Come on. Hang on, Judith.
Up the bank. Come on, boy. Come on.
Right behind you. Up, boy. Up. Come on.
Golly, I didn't care for that.
Oh, Cowboy Skip, they call me. I only pulled two handfuls of hair out of my horse's mane hanging on, that's all.
Come on, boy, come on. We're right on the edge. You can see smoke from the village.
It's about time. We've been in the saddle from 11 o'clock this morning till 4:30 this afternoon.
You don't have to tell me. I've realized every second of it.
Yeah, there she is. You can see the buildings through the trees. Hey, you any idea what we're going to do when we get there, Captain?
Put our horses up at the local livery stable. Take a couple of rooms at the little hotel.
And then what?
And then just sit.
Do what?
Just sit till the news of our arrival spreads over Port Lancer. It won't take long with all 300 of the inhabitants thirsting for the latest news.
And after the news is around, what?
Then I expect we'll be receiving visitors.
What makes you think that?
Somebody in Port Lancer wants to get in touch with you very much. That was the soldier's dying words.
Hey, our forest path just sort of widens out into the main street of the village.
And there's the livery stable on the left-hand side of the street, up ahead.
Yeah. And there's a Comstock Hotel just opposite.
Well, if you ask me, the livery stable looks more inviting than the hotel.
You just ain't kidding there, sister. And the horses will get better food, too.
Hello. Must be a boat in the harbor.
Huh? Do they have passenger boat service up here?
Listen. No, not passenger. That'll be a cannery boat. One of the boats that service the fishing canneries. They carry passengers when and if there are any.
You're pretty well acquainted with the country up here, Captain Friday.
That's my job.
Job?
Yeah.
And just what is your job?
Whoa there. Whoa. Here we are. Now let's get down. Yeah.
Oh, man, does it ever feel good to stand on your own 2 feet again. Here, come on, baby, I'll help you off.
All right.
Just let go now and slide.
Oh.
Go there. Whoa, boy. Whoa. All right, come on. Gotcha. Oh, my goodness, Judith. Man could pick you up and put you in his pocket.
Skip, you're a ladies' man. Put me down. Do you mind?
There you are.
Oh!
Oh, you see? Oh. Saddle lame. You want I should pick you up again?
No. I'll get along.
Here, I'll take the 3 horses in the stable.
You won't need to do that, mister.
Oh, hello. You the stableman?
That's right. Will you be leaving the horses here overnight?
Looks like it from here.
Then I'll be taking them along. Come along, boys. Oh, by the way, mister.
No, what's the matter?
Whoa, boys.
What's the matter?
One of you better come along. I'll be needing a small deposit on the feed bill.
Well, that's silly. You can hold the horses if we don't pay.
It's a rule we got. Avoids arguments later on.
Well, that's the silliest.
Never mind. I'll go along with him. You and Miss Wright wait here.
Sorry, mister, but a rule's a rule.
Yeah, sure.
Hey, come on, boys. Whoa, whoa, boys. Whoa. You folks staying across the street at the Comstock Hotel?
I expect so.
You mind just leaving the bay horse in the box stall there?
All right, but hurry it up. We've had a long ride and we're tired. Come on, Baldy. Whoa, Baldy, whoa, boy. Just time... Hey!
That takes care of one of you. And easy enough it was, too. Now to get the other one in here.
Taking Captain Friday long enough to make a deposit.
Some of these natives along the coast are funny people. Suspicious of everything. Awfully hard to do business with.
Yeah, I suppose.
Hey, look, here comes the stableman. Well, where's the captain?
Maybe he decided to sleep with the horses.
Hey, what's the matter, fella?
Will you come into the stable a minute, mister?
Me?
Looks like one of your horses is going lame.
Oh? Which one?
The big bay. Your friend was wishing you'd step inside a minute.
Oh, will you excuse me a minute, Judith? Oh,
yes. Is there anything...
Miss. They'll be out in a minute. Hey, come along with you.
It's mighty funny. I was riding the bay and there wasn't a limp out of her all day.
Right inside here. If you'll step right in the box stall. Hey!
Hey, Captain, why'd you do that?
Look at this bump on my head.
Hey, you're bleeding.
Oh, not bad. Oh, I'm all right. This crazy old codger lured me into this box stall and then clubbed me over the head. I saw the blow coming and rolled with it, but I still was stunned for a minute.
You mean he brought me in here for the same reason?
That's right.
Why, you dirty old skinflint. Well, he didn't roll with the blow you give him. He'll be out for an hour.
Never mind him. Where'd you leave Judith Wright?
Out in front. She was going to wait.
Oh, come on, let's find out what this game is. Hey, wait. Don't go barging outside until we see the lay of the land. Just a minute.
I don't get it.
Did you say Miss Wright was waiting outside for us?
Well, she said.
What she said and what she's doing are two different things. Take a look for yourself.
Hey, she's hightailing it off down the street.
Yeah. Avoiding the Comstock Hotel like it was poison.
Well, we better get on her tail.
Wait till she gets further ahead.
Well, there's one thing, she's not heading for the harbor. Hey, but why does she want to give us a slip after us saving her? Hey, do you think she's in cahoots with this old stable geezer who tried to lay us out?
Come on. She's far enough ahead.
Right on your coattail. Oh, how you're going to shadow anybody in this one-horse village.
Yeah, I'll just do the best we can.
And have you thought that if there's one man who wants to have us put away in Port Lancer, there's probably at least a couple of more?
Well, anyway, I'm glad it's getting dusk. That's more of a break.
Hey, look, she's turning off the main street.
Okay. Then we can close up a little on her. Now, faster, but keep on the grass so she won't hear footsteps behind her.
Yeah. Right ahead's where she turned off.
Yeah. Hold it.
There's nothing more than a cow path leading off into the woods.
There she is.
I don't see nothing.
I caught sight of her going through the trees. Come on. Easy on those footsteps. Walk along the edge of the grass.
Yeah.
It's getting darker under the trees so we can close in some more.
What the heck's going on, Cappy? We rescued Judith Wright at the cost of the lives of two Army intelligence men. We get her safely to the mainland, only to have one of her friends try to crack our skulls.
We don't know he was her friend.
Well, then why didn't she stick around? Looks to me like the stableman was getting rid of her so she could be on her way.
Smells rotten, all right. Look ahead.
Uh-oh, cabin.
With a light in the window.
And there's friend Judith knocking on the door.
Yeah.
Well, looks like we come to a place where we might get information about a lot of things.
Door's opening for her.
See who let her in?
No. Come on. Let's creep up outside the window. See what goes on inside.
Think they might have a guard outside?
Why didn't he challenge Miss Wright then?
Sounds logical. Come on.
Not too fast. Let's look the situation over as we go. Let's try for that group of trees near the cabin first.
Okay, go ahead. I'm right behind you.
Come on.
Made it.
See anything?
Not a move out of nobody.
Okay. Our next dash will be to the shadow of the house.
Yeah.
Boy, night comes down on you like a blackout out here in these woods.
All right. Here we go. Make it quiet.
Yeah.
Make it.
And still no sign of man or beast.
Now then, we'll ease along the house up to the window.
Uh-huh. Oh, Captain, did you see that? Huh? They pulled a curtain over the window.
Yeah. Still bad.
So what do we do now?
Let's have a look anyway. Oh, don't brush against the logs. They can hear you inside.
I'm watching.
Hold it.
Hey, there's a crack. You can see under the curtain.
Keep quiet, you idiot.
Yeah. See anything?
Uh-oh. Put your eye up to the crack.
Can you see? Captain. Captain Friday, the girl's laying on the floor.
I can see her as well as you can.
They've killed Judith.
I don't see any blood.
Hey, what's that big oblong box that they got sitting on those kitchen chairs?
Where?
Across the room there. They're lifting up the girl's body. But they're putting it in a box.
It's a coffin, Skip. They're putting Judith Wright in a coffin.
Did you see her face? She's not dead yet. They're burying the girl and she's not dead yet.
Skip.
Huh? What's the matter?
If I'm not mistaken, somebody's standing right behind us.
Be they you two gentlemen so much as twitch an eyebrow, I'll blast you to kingdom come.
Adventures by Morse, on Tuned To Yesterday from March 18th, 1944, a syndicated recording wrapping up this hour of series on Tuned To Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next week at the very same time as we continue these great tales. And until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. It's been a pleasure.